Right, we're going back to our series on divine mission, and I'm picking up at Luke chapter 5. I'm going to read it together. On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, and he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. Getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, he asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets." And when they had done this, they enclosed the large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And then they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men." And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. So I just want to pull out three things from this passage that I feel like God's spoken to me about in terms of what it means to be a disciple, what it means to follow Jesus, what are the characteristics of those who've decided to give their life to Jesus and to follow him. And so the first thing is this: disciples live lives of obedience. If you read in verse 4 and 5, it says, "When they'd finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch.' Simon answered, 'Master, we've toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets.'" This is just so incredible. If you stop and think about it for a minute, here we have Peter. I love his obedience here because he is a very skilled fisherman, would have been doing it for a number of years, knew exactly what he was doing. They'd worked hard all night. They'd just come in. They'd caught nothing. They were sorting out their nets. I would imagine they're off home for a bit of a kip because they would have been very, very tired. And then you've got Jesus, who, if you remember, was a carpenter, instructing the fishermen on how to fish. And everybody knows that you don't fish in daylight because the fish see the nets. That's why they did it at night. And so you've got Jesus, who is a carpenter, who, as far as I know, doesn't know much about fishing, telling the fishermen, "Go out and put your nets down." And Peter's like, "We've just been working hard all night, but because you say so, we will go and do it." And I just think that's incredible obedience on Peter's part. Because you see, what Jesus was asking Peter to do was ridiculous. I mean, it didn't make any sense. It had no logical sense in it at all. You don't fish during the day. And Peter's obedience meant that he risked being humiliated if nothing happened, and he risked being misunderstood by his peers. You can imagine it, can't you? Like, he starts to take the boat back out, and the fishermen are like, "Peter, what are you doing? We've just been fishing all night. What do you mean you're going out during the day? We don't catch fish during the day." You can imagine the whole scenario that he must have been in. Plus the fact he was tired. Now, obedience is difficult at the best of times, but if you're tired, anyone who's worked at the night shelter and done a waking night will know that that is a difficult time to be obedient. Yeah. But Peter is obedient, and it's just an incredible example to us. I remember when, 8 years ago, I met with PJ and Simon, and they offered me a part-time job at the King's Arms. And at the time, I was working full-time at Luton, teaching PE. And I went in through a process and a journey of working out what to do, and I felt like it was right for me to take the job. As I was praying about it, I felt God said to me, "You're to hand your notice in your current workplace." And at this point, I had no other job to go to. So it would have meant I had part-time secured, but I would have handed my notice in without anything else to go to. And to a normal human being, you would say, "Well, Wendy, that's a bit silly. It's not very wise. Wait until you've got another job sorted out and then maybe do it." But I clearly felt God said, "Hand your notice in." And so I did. But it didn't make any sense. I mean, I wonder if you've experienced Jesus ever asking you to do something that you think, if this doesn't work, I'm either going to be totally humiliated or ridiculed or misunderstood, or I'm going to be in a complete and utter mess. Can anyone relate to that kind of experience? The thing is that there's something about obedience in our hearts that draws God's attention. He just loves it. I remember a time when I brought some words of knowledge from the front, and I said to everyone, if that makes sense to you, I'm going to be at the back in the corner over there, come and find me. As I made my way back, I knew that no one was going to come back. I knew no one was going to respond. So I walked back and thought, wrong. stood around, and after about 2 minutes, God just said to me, "This is fun, isn't it?" I was like, "Yeah, it's really good fun. Brilliant. Everyone knows that I'm stood back here and no one's coming." The point was that I think Jesus was just saying, it's so much fun being on adventure. And he was just so excited that I'd been obedient to him and had a go. And it didn't matter that no one responded in that situation. I think the reason God really loves obedience is because fundamentally, when we're obedient, we're demonstrating humility in our hearts. When we choose to do what God is asking us to do, even if it means we're going to risk humiliation or being misunderstood, we're making a statement, and the statement is this: God, what you want me to do is much more important than what I want to do. And I want to please you, God, much more than I want to please myself or please other people around me. When we're obedient to God, it expresses humility in our hearts. And if you remember back to the point at which you gave your life to Jesus, if you're a Christian here this morning, your decision was, "Jesus, you're now number one in my heart. You're number one in my life. I'm no longer the one who's in charge. You're in charge." Every time we're obedient to God, we reinforce that decision. We're kind of saying, it's a demonstration of that decision. "Okay, God, you're still number one in my life. You're still most important in my life." Every time we're obedient to him, we reinforce that. And I also love that when we're obedient to God, it means that we're his friends. If you look in John 15:14, it says, "You are my friends if you do what I command." I love that. If we do what Jesus commands, then we're his friends. It comes out of friendship. And I know for me, I've been obedient to God for far too long because of a sense of guilt, or I should do this, or I feel rubbish about this, so I should probably do something about it. I want to increasingly get to a place where I'm being obedient to God because I'm his friend.
Yeah.
And I want to please him as my friend, not because I feel like I ought to or should or I'm feeling guilty.
Yeah.
So, what's God asking you guys to do at the moment? Anything? Could be to do with stepping out in your spiritual gifts, prophesying. Could be to do with dancing in worship. Could be to do with speaking to people on the streets, chatting to your family about who he is. Could be to do with tithing. Is he asking you to tithe your money? It could be big external things, but it could also be little internal steps that he wants you to take. About a month ago, God really spoke to me clearly about a conversation I'd had with somebody about a friend of mine where I hadn't been cheering my friend on, if that makes sense. So this other person was speaking to me about this friend of mine, and I kind of joined in the conversation rather than standing up for my friend and cheering her on. And I felt like God spoke to me and said, "I want you to go and confess to your friend that you've done that." Risky? Mm-hmm. Did she know about the conversation? No. Would she have found out? No. But I knew that God was speaking to me as his friend. Actually, that wasn't okay. So I did. I went and spoke to her and said, "I need to tell you that I had this conversation and I wasn't really cheering you on. I want you to know I love you and I really want to be your biggest fan." And she was amazing and it was brilliant. But I could have ignored that prompting and just carried on.
Yeah.
But I chose to be obedient to the promptings of God.
Yeah.
And the thing is with obedience is that there are blessings that come when we're obedient. You look in this story, Peter's obedience leads to a massive catch of fish, but more than that, leads to an encounter with the King of Kings. There's something about obedience. I believe that my obedience 8 years ago to leave my job without another job to go to, the knock-on effect is what I'm doing today.
Yes.
It's because God saw in me a heart of humility and obedience that is willing to say, "You're most important, and I'm wanting to do what you asked me to do." That's all right. You can give me some feedback at any point. My love language is words of affirmation, so thank you. All right. The second thing about disciples is that disciples love those who don't know Jesus. Let's read verse 8 and 10. "But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, I'm a sinful man, O Lord. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish they'd taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. I want to just say a quick word to those of you here this morning who you would say you're not yet in a relationship with Jesus. You haven't made that decision yet. I want to say to you, on behalf of us as a church, we're very, very excited that you're here with us. I believe that God's got you here because he wants you to know him. He's kind of ambushed you and brought you in here. You might not know it, but he came and sent his son so that you could have a relationship with him. And so we love that you're with us. We want you to encounter God. We want you to have stories like our stories where we once didn't know him and now he's caught us and we're totally in love with him. And so I want to say you are really, really welcome here. And my prayer would be that you guys would feel the most loved you've ever felt in this place. So you're very, very welcome. Those of us who have given our lives to Jesus and would say we are disciples, we need to know that God is really passionate about the lost. Now, I know we know it. What I mean is we need to know it and live it. At the outset of Jesus' ministry, he says to the disciples, from now on, you'll be catching men. Now, he's not saying you're going to have a big fishing net, go into the, you know, and catch them in the net. Obviously, I'm trying to be funny. What he's saying is, what it means is, look, guys, I've come to tell everyone about me and restore a relationship with my Father, and now you're going to come with me and do exactly the same thing. Your life is to bring people who don't know Jesus, who don't know me, to come into relationship with me and my Father. That's what I'm commissioning you to do. Interestingly, Jesus' last instruction to his disciples before he goes back to heaven is what? Go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. So we can see at the beginning of Jesus' ministry and at the end of Jesus' ministry, he's saying, look, guys, this is what I came to do. I'm now commissioning you to go and do the same thing. What we can conclude from these two passages is that Jesus is very, very passionate about the lost, and that as his disciples, we are to be passionate about the lost as well. If you're a disciple of Jesus, if we're disciples, we're called to live our lives in such a way as to be looking out for those who don't know Jesus and to be crying out to God that he would break in and rescue them and see them come into relationship with him. That is something that should stir our hearts and get us excited. Let me ask you guys a question. How are you doing at loving those who don't know Jesus? How are you doing at letting your heart feel what God feels about the lost? Are there any barriers getting in the way of you guys being passionate and expectant for salvation? I've been on a personal journey with this whole area over the past few months. I recently read a book by Charles Finney, who was an incredible evangelist in America. And, I mean, amazing stories. One story really stood out to me. He was asked to say grace at a dinner time, and there were two unbelievers at the table. And he was like, okay, I'll say grace. He began to say grace and then got so overcome in his heart for the state of the souls of the people sat by the table that he just began to weep uncontrollably, just wept and wept and wept. And everyone around the table was a bit like, oh gosh, can we eat, you know? Wept. So much so that one of the unbelievers left the table and went up to his room and locked himself in his room. And the story goes on to say that in the morning, the guy came out of his room having given his life to Jesus. When I read that, I was bothered at the state of my heart when it comes to the lost. I wasn't, here's the fun thing, I didn't feel condemned, and I lived most of my life feeling condemned. I was just bothered because I knew that my heart didn't feel like that for those who don't know Jesus. I felt God speak to me and said, Wendy, you know, you're asking me for increased intimacy with me. You're wanting more of my heart. More of my heart equals an increased heart for the lost because my heart is passionate about the lost. And I suddenly realized, hang on a minute, I'm not getting that. What's going on there? And I realized there were some barriers in my heart to really feeling what God feels about the lost. that had built up over the years. So I just want to share some of those with you, see if you can identify any of them, and see if you can recognise any of these barriers in your own heart. First of all, there was masses of disappointment in my heart that I hadn't worked through. I'd led a youth alpha for years and seen young people make decisions and then disappear off the scene. And I was disappointed. Because one minute it looks like they're really up for it, and the next minute I don't know where they are. And what it did was it fed unbelief in my heart that the gospel isn't powerful enough to radically save people. Genuinely, that's what got into my heart. The gospel isn't very powerful. So much so that I would be leading healing teams on a Sunday, and Simon or PJ would give the response at the end, and in my heart of hearts I'd be thinking, I really hope no one responds to salvation. It's not going to work. I'm happy to pray for the sick. Genuinely, that's where my heart got to. I just wasn't expecting God to be able to radically transform someone's life, even though I know he's radically transformed my life. There could be situations of you guys experiencing something that I experienced of feeling condemned because I knew I should be reaching out. And because I wasn't, I felt condemned. And what happens sometimes is because we feel condemned, we back right off of it rather than God changed my heart. Does that make sense? Yeah. We back right off because, there's grace and there is grace. Hear my heart, there is grace. But my tendency would be, I'm going to back off because I feel condemned. I don't want to feel condemned, so I'm going to stop it altogether. Rather than, Jesus, there's something going on here. I don't know why my heart's not feeling this. Can you change my heart so that I'm passionate about those who you're passionate about? It might be that you're believing lies. It's just not my gifting. Or they're too far away from God. God could not change them. I mean, that could be something you're believing. You look at Saul. Saul is always my hero when I think about that. Look at him. I mean, he was killing Christians, then he became the most radical missionary there was. So that always helps me with that. Or it could be that you don't want to connect with the pain. Because when you start to connect with how you feel about this, particularly if you've got family members or close friends who don't know Jesus, it's painful. And so what we do is we like, don't want to connect with that pain, I'm going to back off and not do anything about it. And certainly that's been my experience with my family. My dad's not a believer, my brother's not a believer. My mum would say she is, but she's not free like I want her to be free. And instead of allowing my heart to feel all the pain of, gosh, I don't want them to die and not be in heaven, I just would back off. And God's been really stirring my heart about feeling and connecting with what he feels. And so I've had some incredible times with my parents, and I used to pray, God, would you send them a Christian who can, who can speak into their lives, and, that they could, I was just longing to have a family who I could get excited about God with and share some of the stuff God's doing in my life with. And I was praying that, and God just kind of said, you're a Christian. It's like, okay. So it's been amazing, actually. We've had some incredible times of praying for my dad and gave him the gospel recently and prayed for my mum this time around when I was at home. Left them a Message of Jesus booklet. They looked it through. And so just I'm trying to love them and be Jesus to them and also getting on my knees and praying for them. And there have been times when I've been praying for them when I've just been absolutely weeping my heart out, just desperately crying out to God that he would break in and rescue my family. And the interesting thing through that has been that God has also been speaking to me about what I've been expecting. As I'm praying for my family, am I actually expecting that God's going to save them? Or am I feeding my hopelessness? I mean, in this story, I love what Jesus does because they catch this mahoosive catch of fish and then he commissions them to go and catch men. He's making a point, okay? I believe he's making a point. I mean, they could have caught three fish and then he could have commissioned them, you're going to catch men. It wouldn't have been the same weight behind it. They had the biggest catch they've ever had. The boats were sinking. And then he says, from now on, you're going to be catching men. What's the point? The point is Jesus is expecting a huge catch. Jesus is expecting a huge catch. He's wanting to say to the guys, look what just happened there because I supernaturally intervened. In the same way, when I supernaturally intervene with my gospel, there will be a huge catch. Yes. And we need to be expecting that. And I felt God spoke to me and said, what are you expecting me to do as you're praying? the truth was, not a lot, but now it's changing. The Bible says, and therefore this is true, our God is mighty to save, the harvest is plentiful, the fields are white for harvest. In other words, anybody you speak to who doesn't know Jesus, in an instant could be radically transformed by the gospel. Because God's mighty to save, he says the fields are white for harvest. That means they're ready. They're ready. In an instant, their lives could be transformed. Anyone I speak to on the streets when I go and encounter people could be their moment at that point. Am I expecting it when I go out? I'm increasingly beginning to. Was I? No. We've got to stir our hearts to expect. God is big. He's very passionate about those who don't know him. It's his idea. It's his plan. We co-labor with him. But we've got to get a stirring of our heart. First of all, to love the lost, love those who don't know Jesus, and be praying them into God's kingdom and expecting something to happen. Okay. We're almost there. The third thing, last thing, is this. Disciples are totally captivated by Jesus. It says in verse 11, when they brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. That there sentence, there's a heck of a lot you can pull out of that. It's absolutely amazing. Jesus had just given these guys the very thing they'd been working hard all night for. He'd just given them the catch of their dreams. The catch that was going to mean their business was, you know, top on, perfect business, lots of money, going to be great for the family. And yet, when they got to the shore, they left everything. They left it to follow Jesus. I mean, the text even says that they were astonished at the catch of fish. But what I love is that the one who produced the miracle was even more astonishing and captivating. He was even more incredible than the fish. They thought this was the thing they needed. This was the thing they wanted. You know, often in life, God will give you what you think you what you want to show you what you really need. That has often been my experience. I've wanted this and I've wanted that, and God's given it to me. And I've come away thinking, hang on a minute, that hasn't satisfied me. You know, if I just see a back healed, in the early days, saw a back healed, amazing, thank you Jesus, a few weeks on, that hasn't satisfied me. It hasn't satisfied me. If I just get to work part-time for the church, that'll be the thing that I would be feel really free, full of life in. Get to work part-time for the church, it doesn't satisfy me. If I just get to run a school of supernatural ministry, that'll be the thing that fully satisfies my heart, because it's exactly what will give me life. It's amazing, but it doesn't satisfy me. Jesus is the only one who can fully satisfy me or you. No one or nothing else can. How are you guys doing at being captivated by Jesus? Does he take your breath away? Genuine question. Does he take your breath away? Are you so utterly consumed by him that nothing else matters anymore? Has he caught hold of your heart in such a way that you would be willing to give up everything? I mean, the Apostle Paul got it, didn't he? Everything's rubbish compared to knowing him. Everything is rubbish compared to knowing him. Jesus has been speaking to me about living a life of being captivated by him, and he's particularly been speaking to me about worship and how I worship. And there were periods of time when I would literally just go through the motions and do it because that's what we do on a Sunday, right? We worship God. So I'd sing the words. And this is so easy to do. Sing the words, but I don't connect in my heart at all. And I think I've come to worship. I haven't worshipped. There have been loads of times when I've said the words and not connected in my heart. And Jesus is looking for connection in my heart. And it's got to the point so much recently where I words are not enough for me anymore. Just singing words, I'm saying for me, just singing words does not cut it anymore for what he's done for me and who he is. I've had to be expressing my body. I've had to be moving in some way. I've had to shout or do something. In fact, Jesus has been asking me from time to time to dance. And, oh my gosh. I almost fell into someone the other week. It was so embarrassing. I just thought, carry on, carry on. I'm not saying this to big myself up because I've been putting off dancing for a long time because I didn't want to look silly. And then I realised, actually, if I'm here to worship God, it does not matter what people think. And he is worthy of everything, and it's an obedience thing, and I try and do it by just looking at him and seeing him. But for me, I just want to connect in my heart. And you know the song, we sing the song, filled with wonder, awestruck wonder at the mention of your name. And I sung those words and I thought, am I? Am I filled with wonder when I hear the name of Jesus? I want to be. I want a friendship with him. I want to love him above everything else. I don't want to just go through the motions of being a Christian. And I just want to, I want to urge us as a church to allow our hearts to connect with how we feel. The amazing thing is that when we live our lives loving Jesus, then being a disciple is real easy. I mean, we will have a heart for the lost, and we will want to be obedient because we won't be able to help ourselves, because we would have caught sight of who he is. At the start of this passage, Jesus asks Peter to do something that made absolutely no sense and that risked him being humiliated and misunderstood. At the end of the passage, we see Peter again doing something completely ridiculous, leaving all those fish and everything else, where he was risking being humiliated and being completely misunderstood, but this time he didn't have to be asked. What was different? He'd seen Jesus. Yeah. Suddenly, everything was rubbish compared to him. It was a no-brainer. I want to ask you guys a question. Have you seen Jesus? Have you seen Jesus? Have you seen glimpses of his mercy and his grace and his love and his compassion and his power and authority and his gentleness? Have you seen him? Has he captivated your heart? Are you totally consumed, head over heels in love with him?